During the week, we have been talking about the learning process, the learning environment. And this evening, we come to talk about perhaps the key to the whole thing, because we're going to be talking about the role of the leader. There are many facets to this role of the leader. Basically, it is the role of the teacher or leader to develop the climate for learning to the end that all may learn. To bring this about, certain conditions and characteristics and skills must be exemplified by the teacher, and conditions conducive to learning must be promoted and engendered. Let us begin with the characteristics of the leader. He must first of all, I think, be committed to the task. He should be thoroughly conversant, nay, imbued with the subject to be taught or discussed. This does not mean that he will be an expert. It does mean that he has planned ahead. He has read in the field, and he studied the subject. He will have developed broad objectives for the class or group based on his knowledge of them and of the subject to be considered. The leader must keep an open mind on the issue at all times. Indeed, his views will not be obvious at the outset, so that he may lead the group to explore fully the question at hand with no threatening factor present. This is a characteristic too few group leaders and teachers possess. It does not mean that the leader has no convictions. It simply means that he holds them in abeyance until the pupils have had an opportunity to discuss, and when he himself thinks the appropriate time has come to reveal what he thinks. He will allow for full and complete analysis before doing this, for too many pupils are content to accept the view of the leader in the hope that they in turn will be accepted by him. At times, I think, the leader may want to needle the participants or shock them into cutting through the superficiality of their approach. On many occasions, I have found that a good way to get a discussion going is to take the less popular view, even an opposing view, and present it as if it were my own viewpoint, or even to ask students to take the less popular view and present it so that all may hear the entire subject discussed. As the leader attempts to develop the learning process, he will be diagnostically sensitive to emotional factors present in the class or group and will prevent the development of bad feelings. He must be tolerant and patient himself and encourage the flowering of these traits in others. He accepts all contributions in the spirit in which they are offered. Never will he ridicule or use sarcasm to discredit a contribution. This will not mean he approves or disapproves the view expressed. It simply means that he is not casting aspersions on the intelligence or the motives of the participant. These are the insights the learner has at that particular moment. It is often helpful to let the learner express the very views that should be changed, for when he does so, the change has begun. The leader's personality will greatly enhance the learning process. He should smile frequently, be friendly and tactful, and exhibit a friendly interest in all members of the group. He should seek good illustrations and sprinkle them throughout the learning process. Above all, he needs a sense of humor. Rarely will a problem develop which a ready sense of humor and a true concern for the individual will not dispel. If the leader is to express concern for each and all, he must know each and all. How How will he get to know his class or his group? There are many techniques. Let us consider the techniques given by the National Council for the Social Studies in how to study a class. To know the class, the teacher must have certain pertinent facts about the pupils, including his needs, interests, abilities, understandings, attitudes, and beliefs. The teacher should understand the dynamic individual and the group interrelationship in the class. A systematic study, then, is necessary. But how shall one perform this? Two types of analysis are included in the class study. First, the teacher collects and records data about the student. In the public schools, we have certain prescribed methods and procedures for doing this. In our church classes, we could devise a modified plan and, of course, concentrate on the type of data we need for our purpose. This first type of analysis will help us see the individual as a member of the group. Data gathered would include age, health status, social maturity level, personal perceptions, including attitudes and beliefs, and information concerning factors at home and the school which might influence the learner. The second type of analysis is concerned with the dynamics of group interaction. This gives the teacher another vantage point. He's looking at his class from a different view. He not only sees the potentialities and limitations of his pupils, but he sees also the relationships within the group, which will allow for the realization of these potentialities and the overcoming of the limitations. The importance of the study of the class as a group cannot be overstated. As teachers, we must know how the individuals react and influence group situations. Recent research confirms our belief that group interaction exerts a major influence on children, that individuals in a group act chiefly as group members. This is the pressure of the peer group mentioned earlier this week. The need to be accepted is quite strong, and often children change their beliefs and attitudes because the emotional climate of the group is such that one must conform to be accepted. And I think I need not remind any of us of illustrations that we can see all around us of this particular thing in action. We have seen young people change viewpoints because they want to be accepted, and it has become the accepted thing to think a certain way. When the teacher understands the dynamics of class interaction, he will be able to work in harmony with the groups and utilize group dynamics to facilitate learning. He must first, though, understand the structure of the group. And this may be done through a sociogram or some other sociometric device. The structure of the group shifts. And so we must not expect to be able to use all year the structure we first defined. And here again, I think we sometimes make mistakes in our dealing with our classes or with groups because we feel that the structure we saw first is the one that's going to carry on. And we know from research again that this is not always the case. The teacher should always seek to see the class as a whole. He needs to feel the climate, the atmosphere. Now, we can use certain signs to tell if the class is happy to be there, for example. If they resent each other or the teacher. If they feel free to speak. If they have pride in membership. I'm sure you have realized that this type of class study can be helpful in many areas of action. Let me mention just a few. A teacher who has made such a study can spot embryonic problems. By doing this, he may avoid serious trouble. What are some of the signs to look for? Antagonistic behavior on the part of an individual will be one such sign. The isolate should be spotted, studied, and helped to fit into the group. There are ways to meet the needs of the isolate and bring him into the group. And we should explore the one which best fits our needs and our purposes in the class. If the teacher finds the group climate unsatisfactory for all members, he may decide that the entire group needs restructuring. In the second place, such a study will help the teacher meet existing problems. The class study becomes an emergency resource in this case. If immediate demands are met, future problems may be avoided. In this case, an ounce of prevention is certainly worth a pound of cure. The greatest advantage, though, is that such a study helps the teacher fill his role in pupil-teacher planning. Understanding the needs, the potentialities, and the limitations of his class, the teacher can help the group plan realistically. If needs are not being met, he may guide them from one set of tasks to another set. Finally, such a study can help the teacher evaluate pupil growth. Have attitudes, beliefs, behavior changed? This will also help the teacher evaluate his own efforts, for he will not accept a lower standard of achievement than that which might be attained. We have noted two aspects of the leader, or the teacher, as I call him often. I interchange the terms here, of the leader and his role. The third is concerned with specific duties and skills. The leader is responsible for the physical arrangements of the room, seating arrangements, ventilation, lighting, class routine, adequate working conditions, materials readily available. Now you may think, why, these are such routine matters. Why bother with them? But they're very important matters, and they are duties that a leader must fulfill. Now, he may delegate responsibility for these matters, but they are his responsibility. The leader in a discussion group states the problem and sees that terms are defined so that all are discussing from a common understanding. He will have well-phrased questions in mind and stimulate members to evaluate issues critically. It is his job to see that the main issue is adhered to. He keeps the group on a time schedule and encourages every member to participate. He carefully avoids dominating the group himself or letting someone else dominate. And this again is a very difficult thing to do at times, for some person in the group may seize the ball and keep it, run with it, keep it, how to bring the rest of the group back into the discussion becomes the problem for the group leader. He will suggest courses of action and will guard against hasty conclusions and solutions. It will be the duty of the leader to summarize periodically in the discussion and finally at the conclusion of the discussion. One of the most difficult duties the leader must perform is to relinquish the role of leader, and for the time being, become simply a member of the group. Now, I think here again, we might illustrate with a case in point. Some years ago, I recall that this sort of thing happened to me as a teacher. We had decided in my 12th grade social problems class to discuss a particular issue. And this was an issue that people had strong feelings about, and one which I was particularly anxious that the entire class would approach from a critical viewpoint. And so I had said, we will discuss this, but every person must remain strictly objective. And I was one member of the class, one member of the group. As the discussion became rather heated and people became very much involved, I found a student making a point that as the leader of the group, I simply could not let go by, so I felt. And I quickly injected a word, a rather strong word, against this. And immediately one of the students called my hand, for he said, Miss Ettinger, you aren't being objective. Now, I think this is something that each of us will find ourselves doing if we aren't very careful. We'll think we have things going and that we're being objective, but suddenly we will find that we really are not just a member of the group. We are still the leader. And so I say this is the most difficult thing the leader will have to do, perhaps, to relinquish his role as leader and for the time being become simply a member of the group. In the course of the discussion, the leader will use a number of techniques in order to achieve variety and good learning climate. I will suggest only a few of the techniques that could be used. You will find many others listed in numerous sources. One of the techniques that I have found to be quite helpful is to write on the blackboard the question to be discussed, calling attention to its phraseology, and particularly when the discussion threatens to wander, bringing the attention of the group back to the question. A second technique we might use is to phrase questions so that a discussing answer rather than a yes or no is required. Why and how questions tend to bring out discussion better than do what, when, or where questions. And we said something about this, too, in one of our earlier meetings. A third technique that we might follow would be to use the yes and no question for the purpose of drawing in the timid members of the group. They might not wish to become involved in a long answer, but we might bring them into the discussion with a simply phrased question with a yes or no answer. A fourth thing we will remember in discussing in our techniques is to phrase the questions impartially so that the questions are not, as we might call them, leading questions. I'm sure all of you have had the experience of being in a group and someone has said, don't you think? Well, a don't you think question presupposes that you do think the way the person who is phrasing the question thinks. And so this is what we mean here about phrasing our questions impartially. And a fifth thing for the group leader to remember is not to answer the questions himself, but rather refer the question to a member of the group. And if no one offers to answer a question, then rephrase it. Sometimes we can offer the question or refer the question to the entire group, asking for a volunteer response. Sometimes we might want to refer the question to a member of the group who has not taken an active part. But we would do this only if we have reason to believe that he can make a contribution. We would not want to do this if we would embarrass a member of the group. Another suggestion in using these techniques is to follow the participant's comment by two or three questions growing out of it. You know, sometimes you offer a comment and it just sort of falls dead. But if the leader could phrase some questions and follow up on the comment for a little while, this might have a great deal of merit. We have suggested that periodically we ought to summarize what has been said, bring the group up to date on our views. And in summarizing, the leader should give credit for major points to those who have made it, to those who have contributed these opinions or major points. At other times, we may wish to ask a member of the group to summarize what has been said, what has been done. If a contribution is to one side of the main point, the leader will make a note of it and perhaps say something such as this: "That is an important factor. May we come back to it when we reach that part of our problem?" Because we'll always have people who will be a little off on a tangent, and we need to know how to handle the contribution that they might make at a particular point. If a contribution seems irrelevant, ask the contributor to explain his point a bit further, to clarify the relation to the topic at hand. And then finally, I would suggest we might use a blackboard to list the arguments on different sides of the question, the advantages, the disadvantages of a course of action, the probable results of a suggested course of action. We could summarize the leader's duties in regard to the discussion technique by saying that he will see that the important facts in the case or problem are brought out. He will make sure that the process of group thinking is based on the scientific or rational method. He will lead the group to make generalizations and to conceptualize. He will keep the discussion objective so that it is never directed toward an individual in the group. He will develop respect for the opinions of others, and he will remain constantly aware of the individual differences of the group. Other techniques may be used other than the discussion technique, which we have discussed in detail here. But the teacher's role, the leader's role, will be somewhat the same in each of the other techniques. Despite all your efforts, there will still be some problems of disinterest, restlessness, and disturbance within the group from time to time. Then what? It would be advisable at that point, it seems to me, to conduct a quick and easy evaluation of the three major ingredients of the group or learning process. And these three are the teacher, the leader, if you wish, the pupil or learner, and the physical environment. A careful analysis of these three may point the way to the solution of the problem. Let's take the physical environment first. Check the conditions of the classroom. Lighting, heating, ventilation all affect learning. Make sure that everyone is seeing and hearing adequately. An orderly room helps set the tone for an orderly discussion. So physical conditions are very important. Next, check the leader or the teacher. The leader may be the cause of the trouble. He could be too lax, too firm, too vague about what is expected. He could be inconsistent in his standards, unfair in his relations with the members. His voice could cause the trouble. It might be harsh, argumentative, too low, too shrill, unpleasant in any number of ways. Does he nag, yell, show lack of preparation, lack of interest? Does he lack the communication skills so necessary to perform his function? Is he weary, and does this show? Perhaps he lacks a real understanding of the pupils. And then check the learner. What of him? We must check to see if there is something affecting the learner that may be causing the trouble. It may be unwholesome or unsatisfactory home conditions. The learner is, after all, a product of the home environment. And many things in his environment will influence his capacity to learn. Is the trouble with the emotional or physical characteristics of the learner? He may be unable to relate to the group, or he may be over quiet, hostile, aggressive, withdrawn. His interests and needs may not appear to him to be getting attention. We have been discussing the role of the teacher or leader in the learning process. It is a many-faceted affair. It all hinges on the leader's acceptance of his role and his obligation to see that each pupil may learn and that all signals are go for the process. In the final analysis, I wonder if the role could be expressed by the ancient proverb, "Whoso would kindle another must glow himself." Our role as leaders and teachers is to glow so that others may be kindled. Indeed, education means to lead out. And this process must be followed in our church classes as well as in the public schools of this nation.